Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Call in with your comments, 347-539-5639. And be a part of the solution. Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and greetings to all my family listening around the world, because we are all one human family, and I love you all, those I know and those I have not yet met. So, to my family in China, Sao An, in India, Subrabhat, in Japan, Ohayo gozaimasu. In Korea, Jo enachim. In Russia, Dobre utra. In Germany, Guten Tag. In France, and all the French-speaking people around the world, Bonjour. In Spain, and all the Spanish-speaking people around the world, Buenos dias. In Egypt, Sabah el Khair. In Ghana, Mache. In Nigeria, Ekaro. In South Africa, Sanibonani. In Senegal, Jam Ingafanane. In Kenya, and all the Swahili-speaking people around the world, Habari za Sabui. In Israel, Boker Tov. In Saudi Arabia, and all the Arabic-speaking people listening around the world, Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, and may peace be upon you all.
And welcome to a Tuesday morning on The Female Solution. Well, you know, Chicago's notorious gang crime has made international headlines, and it's probably cost the city its recent bid to host the Olympics. And some have complained that Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart has responded more like a politician than a law enforcer when it comes to addressing tactics to end street crime. Sylvester Baker, with an extensive background in law enforcement, is vying to become the new sheriff in town. Will his views on crime prevention and his plans to rehabilitate those incarcerated for crimes change the violent climate in Chicago and in surrounding Cook County? Or is the problem of crime so extensive that merely changing the face on the sheriff's office isn't enough? What can potential Sheriff Sylvester Baker do that hasn't been done by Tom Dart? And how will it affect criminal justice and crime prevention Cook County? Well, we certainly welcome to our show, to give an opportunity to give us some hope for the future, Mr. Sylvester Baker. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, my sister, Naima, and it's just a pleasure. And it's an honor just for you to have me on this morning.
Well, I'm excited to hear your plans for the office of sheriff of Cook County and also get some clarity on exactly what the sheriff does. You know, most people, when you say sheriff, you know, and they're thinking however they have interacted with sheriff's office, you know, evictions and so forth. But there's a positive thing that sheriffs have the ability to do to affect change. What is your vision should you become a sheriff of Cook County?
You're so absolutely right. But let me start first by just introducing myself to your listeners. I'm a 22-year veteran of the Cook County Sheriff's Department. And the sheriff's office, we use those words synonymous, but the sheriff's office, there are three departments in the sheriff's office. There's court services, which is courtroom security. that's corrections, the second, which is the security of the county jail, and you have the police division, which is responsible for providing police service to unincorporated areas here in the Cook County, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was assigned to the Corps of Corrections, the jail, for 3 years of my 22 years, and the Sheriff's Police for 19 years. During my 19 years with the Sheriff's Police, I served 3 years on the county SWAT team. Actually, I was the only African-American on the county SWAT team, and a lot of people in Cook County didn't know that we had a county, the Sheriff's Department had a SWAT team. I served 3 years, I mean, correction, 6 years in field operations, which is another name for a patrol, and 10 years in the gang crime narcotics section. I was promoted to the rank of sergeant in 1995, and I was assigned a nine-man squad where we conducted gang and narcotic investigations throughout Cook County. I had the privilege of being detailed away from the department, and to be detailed is a sign of high honor. I was detailed to the FBI for 14 months, to the Drug Enforcement Agency for 6 months, and the Illinois State Police for 6 months. So I actually was detailed away from the department almost 2.5 years of my career because of my extensive street experience and knowledge about gangs and crime. So that was a high honor. My background consists of a BA degree in psychology, a master's degree in public administration, and I am a candidate for a PhD in social psychology. Actually, the semester just ended. I just became a candidate. And just for your listeners, a candidate is a student who finished all the coursework and I only have to write my paper, my dissertation now, which will probably take another 2 years because it's a lengthy process. Now, my strategy for the Sheriff's Office, and I should also say I'm a member of Holy Trinity Missionary Baptist Church here in Chicago, where under the leadership of Reverend David O'Neill, and where I've served on the deacon board for 10 years. So I do know and serve the Lord. So I like to make that known. Should have made that fact known. My strategy for the Sheriff's Department, there's so many issues there, but I would like to discuss three: public safety, youth services, and rehabilitation programs. First of all, I plan to totally reorganize the Sheriff's Department, total reorganization. And see, currently, as it relates to public safety, our mission of the Sheriff's Department entails that we provide security for unincorporated areas. I want to broaden that mission. The Sheriff's Department under my administration is going to go into what we call a countywide policing strategy. That's not in effect now. Countywide patrol by the sheriff's officers, a countywide gang and gun teams, countywide task forces, countywide investigators. We're going into a countywide strategy. Now we kind of relegated to an area in unincorporated Cook County. It's not good. The public is not getting their full, I want to say not just their full buck out the sheriff's office. We were not getting the full value from the sheriff's office and experience that's within the sheriff's office. They're not getting that service, full service. I'm going to implement an 800 hotline program whereby any resident in Cook County can call the sheriff's office on an 800 number and report any criminal activity, with the focus being on gang prostitution and narcotics trafficking. But any citizen in Cook County, that's going to be a first. Not only will you be able to call the town police department that you're in, but you'll also be able to call the sheriff's office. We plan to respond to all calls within a maximum of 48 hours, because of our countywide nature. I plan to the academy is currently 12 weeks. The academy is going to be extended to go to from 12 weeks to 20 weeks. And in Cook County here, we have deputy sheriffs, and we have a problem with not really a problem, but there's some perception images in terms in the law enforcement community as far as the sheriff's office go. We're not. Our level of respect is at a low level in the law enforcement community, and that's because we have deputy sheriffs and sheriff's police. So you have a portion of our department. I'm going to say this slow because I don't want to confuse our listeners. Every officer in the sheriff's department has police power, but some go through a little extra training and they're certified by the state as police officers. and a larger percentage are just sworn as deputy sheriffs. Now, those officers that are just only sworn and not certified by the state as high as those officers that are certified by the state, the law enforcement community. So we want to bring that level of training back, and the whole department is going to undergo what we call police certification, and that will have a great impact on the sworn officers as well as the law enforcement community, because in the law enforcement community, we have a low level of respect, and that needs to be greatly improved.
Well, I have a question about that.
Okay.
I have a question about the, you say in your campaign to take back our communities, you'll call for the special deputization of 1,000 citizens to act as intelligence and information officers throughout Cook County, and you'll provide 40 hours of professional training, and they'll work 24 hours a month and be given designated assignments, and they'll be supervised by veteran supervisors.
The veteran officers.
And you're also, veteran officers will supervise them, and a federal grant will pay for this special deputies so they can receive a monthly stipend. Now,
exactly.
It sounds great. You just mentioned
Is it workable is the question.
Yeah.
Now, let me go over that, because you said that. And you can
challenges to overcome with that.
You know, and you said exactly
attitudes
like,
and so forth.
And I commend you, sister, Ema. You said exactly like I wanted to express. You said exactly. You didn't miss anything. Now the strategy with that one is we go out in the community and we put the word out for recruiting of a thousand, and I want to say courageous black men. Men with courage are not afraid, because this is the effort where the black women always have the perception that the black men is really, we have dropped the ball in our community in terms of trying to, where are we at? Where are all the black men? We are all those black men here. But you got to understand, for the black men to go out there to stop the violence, it's going to become young black men versus old black men. We really can't solve this problem with our youth without coming from a position of power. And that's just how tough these young guys are and how set they are in their ways. And we had to come from a position of power. And I said, we have to have law enforcement power. It says I have to say that. But now let's go back into the meat of the question you asked. That strategy, and that was a strategy I sat down with a team, and we came up with that. When 1,000 black men, and we weren't going to really say black men, but we were really hoping all black men, we try to avoid the press coming at that. But anyway, let's say 1,000 black men come on board. Now, these men would be recruited via through the churches, whatever, how we got everybody together in there. After we come up with 1,000 black men, just as you said, they will be given 40 hours of training. 40 hours of training. And, again, supervised by a veteran county officers, preferably sergeants and above. Now, they wouldn't be deputized. They wouldn't be deputized to carry guns, but they would, within this 40-hour curriculum, they would be taught how to do some sort of street surveillance, street surveillance and gang identification and things like that. Because to make it short, what their role would be, they would be more of the eyes and ears of the sheriff's department. We did not want them to take action, you know. But in identifying all of the shooters, and see, here in Cook County, and specifically here in Cook County, with emphasis on Sakai, we have a problem with shooters. Shooters have, to me, and my main objective when I am the sheriff of Cook County is we're going after the shooters. In addition to the Chicago Police Department, we're going after the shooters and the rapists. But back to the question. So once we get these guys into that through that 40-hour course, they'll be given identification, not STAR, but identification. You know, and we're working just like a National Guard, where you get that 24 hours a month, so they'll be on patrol, assigned it throughout Cook County, not just Chicago, but throughout Cook County. Now, when you span that out, and with on a 24/7 basis, so when you span that out with 1,000 guys throughout Cook County, that's not going to be, we're going to have to cover strategic areas with the high crime areas having emphasis first. So you have two-man cars, they just riding around with radios and reporting crime. Some days it might be, in hopefully many days it's low activity, but so not like a Gestapo police state, but this is something so we can get a handle on things. And once the word would get out with our young guys that we're out here, that things will go down, you know, I think it's going to have an impact, a strong and a great impact on the crime figures. But the money, how would we get the money? Now, when you're looking at 1,000 guys and you're looking at maybe a stipend of $150 or $200 a month, you're talking about $200,000 to fund this program a year. Now, I'm quite sure, and I'm one that's going to delegate. I'm a delegator, you know, and I'm not a micromanager. So I'm quite sure that there's some sort of federal grant, Safe Communities Act, Safe Neighborhoods Act, where we can fit this program in, Community Watch Act or something. I might not be saying the names right, but I'm quite sure there is a federal grant out there that covers what we're doing. If not, we're going to try to work that in the program. And here in Chicago, Naima, another thing in addition to that that I'm going to do within my budget is that same ceasefire is what I'm trying to say.
The
ceasefire strategy, I'm going to bring that program into the sheriff's office under the Community Intervention Network. You know, and that's something I don't have to go to the county board. That's going to be a new initiative that I have. It's going to be the same, and I'm going to bring in ex-gang, probably the leadership in the gang, probably the guys, experienced guys, to come in and do pretty much the same thing that ceasefire is doing, but they're going to be doing it as county employees. Now, I'm going to catch a little flack with that because that whole team is going to be ex-offenders, going to be managed by ex-offenders and supervised by ex-offenders. And these guys are going to be part of our interrupters, and when we have a shooting or a rape or a hard-to-solve crime, these guys, when they come on board, they got to be willing to help solve these crimes. They can't come on board and still got that code of silence. If you come on board in this community intervention network, you know, you got to let the code of silence go. If these guys are predators in our community, then we're not honoring no code of silence. So with that, and to connect both of them, with those 1,000 guys, and I'm going to be able to get that through. And I think that the white power structure is going to be a little scared talking about deputizing 1,000 black men. So when they understand the program, then it's not a matter of whether or not they accept it or not, because I'm going to challenge them. Now, what's wrong? We're trying to make our community safe. Nobody's really targeted the black community to really make it safe. And you're always saying the black community is going to have to get our community together. Well, that's what I'm about. I'm going to spearhead that drive. You know, we're going to have – and brothers are ready to stand up. The sisters
yes,
might not believe
are.
It, but black men are ready to stand up. You know, and I'm going to lead the charge, see. So don't – and I kind of hate it when sisters think, all our black men, they just sitting down. We're not afraid. We don't want to go to war with those young brothers because that's what it would be. We out there with no power. You know, and not saying they don't respect them. We have to come up with a position of power, as I stated earlier. And it's not all about locking them all up. I'm working on a PhD in psychology. I'm a social worker / policeman. Even when I was working gang crime narcotics, I was that way. I talked to the guys on the street. I have a social worker attitude more so than a policeman attitude. You know, it's not us versus them to me. It's not because that's how you talk in the police academy. It's us versus, not directly, but it's subtly ingrained in your head. It's us versus them. It's not, these are my people. We got to talk to these brothers. We got to talk to these sisters, you know what I mean? So it's clearly going to be
I think you're right. I think they need fathering more punishment. I mean, they really, you're talking about people who were missing that element of learning respect and self-control. And so you're right, they need fathering, and that's a position of strength for a man who knows how to get his son in order. You know, the attitude that you're taking kind of reminds me of a program that I read about that happened in South Africa. There were a lot of young elephants that were orphaned, you know, because people are hunting ivory and so forth. And a lot of the older elephants were killed, and you had a lot of young male elephants growing up without the older bull elephants, and they were starting to go wild. They were starting to rape the little rhinoceroses and tear up the surrounding villages and so forth because they were out of control. So what they did in that area, they shipped in older bull elephants from other places, and they infused that older male elephant population. And what happened is that those older bull elephant males got those young males back in line. What happened? It reduced their testosterone level, just having those older males there to keep them in check, to stop them from the destructive behavior. And so it changed the situation. And it's the same as what you're describing here. What's missing is the effect of older, strong males to put those young males back in order. And that's the natural order of things.
Look at this. I have a personal interest also. My son, and I know I brought him up to quote unquote Catholic school, Saint Sabina here, Lee High, sent him away to Stillman in Tuscaloosa. He's a vice lord. Well, he's older now, but he's a vice lord. Came, he got caught up in gang structure. I know I gave him love. He felt belong. I know he wasn't deprived. So you find. So I have a personal. I got nephews that are disciples. So this gang thing is in my family too. I'm not exempt. See, so I have a personal interest in it too. I'm not one of those quote unquote bougie black families. I'm a regular black family with gang issues, you know, mental health issues. The works in my family. I mean, I want to share my whole, you know, that we talk about on national radio. But no, I have a personal interest. My older brother was involved in gangs, Cobras. You see, so this is not nothing. I'm new to this. See, I got insight in this thing. I come up in a neighborhood that was a disciple, dominated by disciples on 79 in Auburn Gresham community, 79 all in the 60s. So this whole thing I know, so I got insight, know them, know how they think. You come up out of the environment, you know about it. You know how us black people are. We know what's going on. You know, so I could work with this thing from a sociological perspective, not just a criminal's perspective. You know what I mean? So we don't want to criminalize. We don't want to lock everybody up. We can work this thing, get them involved. We all know unemployment is the root cause of everything. Well, how do you get into that? You know, getting into buying black is a whole another concept, because there's a strong correlation between economics and crime. You know, we all know
right.
that. But my thing, bring it, like you said, kind of like showing love, but then this is taking me, this is actually taking
tough
on from our youth. Yeah, tough love. Because some of them we know, a small percentage we hope, that is just going to be out there and we just don't want to listen to us. And then we got to go and deal with them from a, you know, criminal perspective. We have to play police with them. We can't play social worker with them because they're too tough and they don't want to hear it, they don't want to listen. But we're going to give it everything we got before we give up on them. Everything we got and some. Before we give up on them, you know what I mean? And so it's going to be a new share of the problem. We're going to fight crime. I'm not turning to, you know, but we're going to have a strong, strong social service component, a strong one, you know what I mean? And so, and then another thing I'm doing here in Chicago, before I go over to youth in terms of crime, we're going to have a 200-man Chicago task force. That's something going to be new. I'm trying to make a city-county task force where the sheriffs in Chicago work together as teams, but policemen are territorial, not teaming. This is state turf, county, y'all better get back out in the suburbs. That's why the county has never been in the city. It's been an unwritten rule, and I want your listeners to listen, an unwritten rule for the sheriff to stay out the city. Y'all do all y'all police work in the suburbs. This is unwritten now. I said unwritten. We know you knew better. Don't go in Chicago. Yes. Now, suburbs, because we're so much bigger than a suburban department than they need, but they're not territorial. You follow? But CPD was territorial because they really, those 12,000 members, only 5,000 of y'all sheriffs. It's kind of like the higher numbers your police department is, the bigger you are. So we outnumber all the suburban department. They glad to see us. Chicago, get all your butt out of here. Get your butt out of here. We'll fight the crime here. I'm just letting your listeners know what's going on. But now that's over with me. That's over. Protocol, political protocol here in Chicago dictates that I go sit down with the mayor and say, well, hey, you know, y'all had 500 mayors, 500 murders in 2013. Sheriff Dodd didn't do anything about it. He just ignored it. I don't know if it was white children, whether he had helped or not. Or is it because he don't know, he don't care, or is it because he's just really not a law enforcement professional? You know, and here in Chicago, they're talking about bringing the National Guard in. What's wrong with the sheriff department? What's wrong with the state police? They talked about bringing the National Guard here in Chicago. Come on now. That was ludicrous. You don't bring the National Guard. What about when the National Guard shoots somebody? Then you don't want them out.
Right.
So, but my point is that the people didn't think enough respect of the sheriff's department to say, well, hey, why don't I bring the sheriffs in? They wouldn't even think of the sheriff because they didn't see the sheriff's department as a viable law enforcement agency. They never said, why the sheriff helping Chicago out? Nobody even thought about that here in Chicago.
No, they didn't think about it.
We want the National Guard. Now, what's wrong with the sheriff and state police? That's awesome, man. 200 guys on the sheriff department, 50 guys on state police. What's wrong with that? They did not think about this, you know. So we got to change that. That's the image. That, as I say, that our perception, we have a very low perception in terms of law enforcement. All the sheriffs do, they protect the jail, they evict people, they serve summons, they protect. No, we got a full-service police department. Vice, intelligence, gang crime, everything, full service. Of course, the people don't really know too much about the sheriff's office, but going back to what I was stating about the 200-man detail, so protocol would be to talk with the mayor, sit down with him, political protocol, and let him know that you know, you had all those murders last year. I want to offer my services, and we want to bring in a 200-man task force, well-trained county officers that know the streets well, and they're street smart. They're tactically sound. They know how to work the streets. They're good patrol officers and work with the city. But now we had to work, one county guy, one city guy, one county guy and a city guy and a cop. We had to do it that way. We'd just all be on the same page, in a harmonious type situation. And hopefully, after we don't want to say get his blessing or get his permission, we come in. I definitely won't go to chief of police because I'm an elected official. I would talk to the mayor, not the chief of police. I'm over him. But if the mayor, and understand that, if the mayor does not agree to that, I would kind of wonder why, I don't have to as the county sheriff. You know, we could come in better. You follow what I'm saying? I don't have to.
Yeah, you want it to be a cooperative effort.
There we go. We want a mutual agreement here. Because you have politics here in Cook County. I want to think that the mayor is like the governor. Here, the mayor's probably have more political power than the county board president here in Cook County, for your listeners.
Yeah.
So that's just to be politically correct. I would do that, but I don't have to do that. And I think the mayor knows that, but I can see why he wouldn't not want to agree with a 200-man detail coming to assist in the high-crime area. I mean, that's all about making your city safer, and really is about helping save black lives, which I would probably take to the public. I'm not going to be your regular, I didn't say regular, because I'm going to talk about elected officials, because some of them probably mean well. They just afraid. Black elected officials here in Chicago, they're not corrupt. I want to say that in my opinion. They're not corrupt by far. They are afraid. Now, in all my psychological skills, I haven't come up with what they're afraid of. I want to just say the white man, you know what I mean, or the white power structure. They're afraid. I mean, some of them are self-centered. They're in it for themselves, but they're afraid more. They're not corrupt. They are afraid.
I think it's fear of losing an election because they will be painted as someone who is too radical or whatever the designation is when you are painted as more militant, whatever the case may be, than what other people are comfortable with. So they're afraid of earning a negative public image that could affect their election and therefore their job. So that's where the fear is, where they don't speak out when they should.
Yeah, but militant is defined as taking care of your own people. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're militant if you look out for
so
black
that's
people.
That's a good thing.
Do you hear what I'm saying? So they don't want to be militant, and the militant is defined by the white power structure as taking care of your own people. They do it.
Mm.
The Asians,
absolutely.
The Hispanics, the Jews, everybody. So if they didn't make militant be taking care and looking out for your own people, that's crazy. That's ludicrous. But let me move on to the youth, to my that second. And I had three. I had public safety and youth programs and rehabilitation. Let's move on to the youth services. Now, this my vision. I envision recruiting 5,000 youth countywide. Again, go back. I said I'm a delegate, so we're talking about having coordinators of this youth, at least three or four guys that know sports and know mentoring and know how leadership training with youth. So recruiting 5,000 youth countywide, and that's going to be easy. We're going to sponsor everything, the transportation, the meal, clothes, the uniforms, the places, everything that's involved in with our youth. Is we going to pick up. So the parents are not going to pick up nothing. You know, we're going to sponsor everything. All we need is participation. So now what we want to do with these youth programs, and I think I could work that in the budget. You know, I think I could work this because the county is top-heavy. I ain't going to try to switch stuff around when I go into that. But anyway, back to the youth program, we're talking about a mixture of mentoring programs, sports programs, talent shows, and the awarding of 100 scholarships annually. Now, the mentoring program is going to focus on anger management, which you know, and conflict resolution. We know those, you know, teaching our kids how to resolve conflicts without shooting, you know, talking it over, discussion, you know, decide who was really right and wrong, who was really at fault, you know, anger management, conflict resolution, and teaching them how to deal with their anger, how to express themselves. And then mentoring, just having those male and female role models around, so again, so they can look up to somebody and know. Because you know, we have role models. I have role models, and you have role models. And a lot of our role models, if you like me, they didn't even know that was my role model. I had a lot of people I looked up to. I never approached them and told them. And I looked up to them because I liked the way they handled it. They were very productive and so forth and so on. So within that mentoring program, we would have male and female role models. Leadership training, teach them how to be leaders, etiquette when it comes to church etiquette, or just etiquette, all-around etiquette, you know, for table etiquette, church etiquette, some etiquette classes that they need to do. Etiquette would come, protocol would come, they're looking for a job and all kind of things like that. All these things, I have a serious vision with our young people with a target number of 5,000. Now we're talking about sports program. I don't care what nobody says, sports program is a serious crime deterrent to our black male youth population.
Yes, it is.
We're talking
it
about
is.
When we were younger, in the 60s, they had CYO boxing. Boxing, I'm going to try to bring boxing back, football, basketball, tennis, soccer, golf, volleyball, every sport, not just basketball, all of the sports, because you have a different interest by different youth. So we were, and then all within that 5,000, that number 5,000, you know. So then we want to go on to at least one or two talent shows a year. And, you know, and again, we know we got to make sure we have a heavy police presence at those. And we have an award at maybe $1,000 for the first prize. But I want a nice, and within those sports, let me go back. Within those sports programs, we want to have a trophy contest and trophies, but we want trophies and cash awards because we want to keep them involved. And sometimes trophies they lose interest, but you got trophy and cash, those guys will stay to the end. You know what I mean? Trying to, and then not just the first place, we might have first through fifth place. So as many teams as them, you know, as possible can get awarded. You know what I mean? Not just first place. First to all the way to fifth. We want to try to give everybody something, some kind of way, just to keep them involved. Because what is money, but we're gonna make sure that we have the money, so the money's not gonna be an issue. We'll put a dollar price. We'll put the dollar tag on all these programs once we get an office and how much they cost. But I'm saying the sports program is gonna run about at least $3 million. You know, so. But anyway, about $3 million for the youth services program. But back to the two talent shows a year. You know what I mean? And what we have, because they love the rap, it's not going away. But see, and all while we're doing these talent shows, we're mentoring and we're instilling civics in them, teaching them they should vote, they should come out and vote, and they should buy black. We're teaching the community pride, self-pride, and self-love as opposed to self-hatred. All these concepts we're coming into our young people with all while we got them in these programs. See, so we're going to have curriculums for the mentors to come. They're going to do regular, you know, instilling things in these young people while you got them, because you're coaching them. You're becoming coaches with these young people in all facets, you know. And so we're molding them into a more positive figure, you know, a positive individual.
It certainly sounds very proactive. It sounds extremely proactive in terms of preventing the development of crime and preventing a lot of the idleness that leads to crime and preventing a lot of the frustration that gets expressed through crime.
So as I say. I'm going to give my idea to those probably a team of five individuals who are, this is their expertise. So I'm not going to have to brainstorm. Here's my idea. Here's my vision. We sit in a meeting with these designated individuals, and this is my vision. This is what I want y'all to put together. So they're going to run with it. So it's not nothing I'm going to have to toy with, because, you know, they'll just be given the vision to run with and bring it together and bring back what the program that they put together, and then we could tweak it. I go over, tell them, give me a little bit more of this, take a little bit of that out, and so forth and so on. So this all can happen. It's all realistic. It's not nowhere near in the area of a dream. This is all realistic. It can happen. So the scholarship piece, 100 awardees annually, a scholarship, a cash scholarship ranging from $500 to $1,000 based on I don't know what the numbers might be, how we get this program together, but I want to award high school seniors en route to college with a $500 to $1,000 scholarship. Every year I'm in the office, 100 scholarships. Now, the selection process, the criteria is going to be C student, B student, A student, perfect attendance. It may be just most improved. It's not going to be honor roll only. It's not going to be that. So that program, if we give everybody $1,000, that's a $100,000 program. I'm quite sure all those vendors and contractors that have, I could probably solicit them in terms of being sponsors. You have a lot of white, black, Jewish philanthropists that will probably contribute to that scholarship program and fundraisers on my part, too. So I don't think we're going to need between, if we do 500, we're going to need 50,000 a year. If we do 100, we're going to need 100,000. I don't think it's going to be hard raising that 100,000, because that's such a, probably the best cause that I would have.
Yeah.
The scholarship program. So we're talking, just to recap on that, we're talking talent shows, sports programs, mentoring programs, and the annual awarding of scholarships in our youth, in these youths. In these youth programs I plan to implement. Mm-hmm.
Well, I imagine a lot of those activities can also serve as fundraising vehicles because, you know, people will buy
exactly.
a ticket to go to a major talent show or –
Right.
A sporting event.
Yeah, all those,
let me
see it. Right.
You know, these are activities that can actually be revenue generating at some point, just because.
And we know it's gonna be tough
to see these things.
It's gonna be tough getting it off the ground. Those sports, because we're gonna have those different personalities, gang affiliation. But we're gonna work with them. And there's one thing about
that.
Sure.
I mean, when they used to have the midnight basketball,
I'm
told that went very well. And
well, he's going to be on the team.
Father Michael Slager, he had the sports teams.
Walker's on the team. Walker's on the team.
Yeah,
Gil Walker's on the team. He's going to run that. Yeah, Gil Walker's one of my – yeah. You're talking about Gil. Yo, Gil's on the team. You already talked about that. Yeah. Gil knows he's handling the sports program. You know, Earl Williamson. Earl was a big coach down he's going to be on. Earl and Gil are two guys I know going to help how that bring that program together. Those two guys know the game. They know, you know, so we already talked about that. They're on board. They're also on board part of the campaign, too, the campaign team. But now moving on to that last one, the final one we'll talk about is rehabilitation. And that's a tough one, you know, so because –
Yeah,
we're talking about these guys is really with hard mind. They really get man real strong. I want to call it strong mindsets and really setting their ways. But within the county jail, which I initially want to start, is you're talking about a daily population of about a daily population of about 10,000 detainees. So my strategy with that is to have 10%. In the learning environment, that's 1,000, because we have to remember that it's still a jail, not a school. But I'm gonna try to make it. I'm gonna try to bring up, you know, have a strong schools component. Now, the rehabilitation piece gonna consist of bringing an automotive mechanics program, culinary arts, cosmetology, and barber college. Now we're gonna beef up our computer class, introduction to computers, and we're gonna beef up the GED classes. Now, Naima, culinary arts, automotive mechanics, cosmetology, I don't think barber college is, but those three are all city college programs already.
Yeah. Well,
about
I got a question about that.
I
have a question about that, and I don't know if it's because there's the reality that people who are incarcerated, some of them have issues, and the programs you're talking about, of course, they'll be interacting with tools that could also double as weapons.
Good question.
So
how do you
deal with the security element?
It's called a strip search when you leave the room, Naima. It's a strip search when you leave the room. Entering and leaving the room is a strict strip search. Strip search, that bare bone, bare skin, every time. Cameras throughout the room, of course, monitored. Personnel that's not instructing, monitoring. So we have a lot of things, security precautions are going to be in place. Cameras, the human visual, you know, human visuals, observing everybody, you know, two or three officers also on the set that's not teaching, that's just visual, just doing visuals, and then a strip search leaving the room, and then another strip search when you get back to your area. So
I would assume.
So you're talking about you're talking about knives, tools, wrenches. Oh yeah,
I mean, I would assume that's excellent.
You're talking about the non-violent people being in those programs because
they can't have fights break out and people will be
pop each other in the head with a wrench. I got a million dollar lawsuit on me because one inmate found a way to sue me to students taking classes. I provided weapons, but so that's a tricky one now. Now when I say a thousand, so you might be talking about. Now, culinary arts, we know the computer class at GED is simpler, so we might have a selective few going here and there. And then when you talk about 1,000, so maybe 40 or 50 might be in culinary arts. The cosmetology and the barber college is not that bad. It's the culinary arts and it's the auto mechanics is the one. Automotive technology is the one. So we have to deal with the background and really be on them and really keep a watchful eye on all of those detainees and do some excellent screening. And you know it's going to be some flaws. We're going to have some like what you said is going to be possible. They're going to try to steal, especially with culinary arts, try to steal something and bring it back and make it what we call a shank, bring it back and make a shank out of it.
Yeah,
if it's not, they might try to bring a butter knife back, a fork back, a spoon back, and sharpen it up on one edge. You'd be surprised. There's still a spoon out there and try to make it a knife. So, no, that's why the search is coming in. Yeah, leaving the place and when you get back to your area of assignment. You know, area of residence.
Well, maybe all the utensils have to be made of plastic.
And accounted for right there on the spot.
You got to count them.
And we only have enough for them to use. We only have before and after. You know, and along with cameras and the human eye. We have cameras and the human eye. So we're watching on camera, and we got a couple officers stationed around the room watching everybody, too. So it's not in that auto mechanics and that culinary arts. That's a serious one. But it's a lot of kinks in that one. That one's going to do a lot of study, like you're saying. That's got to be worked out a lot. You know what I mean? And then this is my vision. So, we know we have to work that one out. The GED is going to be easy. Because that's strictly straight classroom work. Computer's going to be easy. They might want to get off track and try to email somebody while they're on the computer, stuff like that. But that's going to be pretty easy. But the overall intent and the mission, just try to change their mindset, give them some training, while they're in there, change their mindset. Because the jail just further breeds them into a criminal lifestyle. It doesn't really do anything.
Absolutely. It doesn't rehabilitate.
And I can't do all of them. Like I said, it's a select 1,000. And another thing we got to think about, Naeem, is look, is you in the program and then you bond out. I can't say, some people get in the program there for a week and they bond it out or they beat their case. So it's not like a penitentiary you're going to beat. I don't know how long nobody's going to be there. You might beat your case the next day after you got accepted. Your family may bond you out a week after you've been in the program. You don't want to stay in the jail and stay in no program. You see what I'm saying? So we got a whole lot of other things we got. So how do we keep it running? Because people are going to be getting bonded out. They're going to beat their cases. They're going to lose their case and go to penitentiary. So we even got that element we got to think about. How are we going to keep this thing, keep the enrollment up? Because we can't predict how long any of the detainees are going to be in there. But we got to figure all that out. You see what I'm saying?
That's another thing, and I guess that leads me to two questions. First of all, these are programs that they might not have access to on the outside. So you're in a training program and you're getting skills inside Cook County Jail, and then you get outside and can't get the
same access. Maybe we can still let them come back. Can we still let them come back when they get out? I don't. Then now we're talking about security. But they come from the outside with tools. You see, so that's logistical. We got to work it out. You got to sit at the table and think about it. You see, there's a whole lot of safety logistics in that's got to be kicked out. And again, I'm a delegator, Naeema. Somebody's going to figure that out. I'm going to bring that back to the table.
Now the second question also with that is many times people may have training in an area and even do work in an area inside the jail system, but then they can't get hired once they're released. So then is there a possible, entrepreneurial component to these training programs. Or if you're going through culinary arts, you're actually maybe able to learn how to establish a business as a chef, because you may not get hired by a company just because you've got a record or something like that. And same thing with, you know, barbers. I know that there are some restrictions on certain professions that, that they've been able to get into.
So now you're talking about counselors, maybe get some counselors, the job placement counselors who will be out in the field seeing which companies are willing to take a risk with ex-offenders that have certain backgrounds. So now you're talking about maybe putting a counselor in that in those programs, you see. So somebody has to be out into the community, into the business community, trying to reach out and see who's going to hire these guys. So that's a whole another avenue there. But it's a good question, and it's something to be considered. See, so that's perfect. But now another couple of just to do one.
Another question that I have, because they're kind of two different categories of people. There are those who are in there just because they didn't really have the money to pay for a bond to get out, and you know, waiting trial and so forth and all of that. But their crime might have been something like, you know, carrying some marijuana or something, you know, non-violent
possession
of
cannabis. Yeah,
they're not really
cannabis,
a person that's dangerous. So that's one instance. And I know Reverend Jesse Jackson has talked about even filing a lawsuit against the county to have those kinds of people who are just in there because of that kind of a charge but don't have the money to get out, to have them released
I will touch on the overcrowding solutions and the overcrowding issue after we talk about this rehabilitation piece. Overcrowding is a big issue, but just to move forward, another vehicle that we're going to do is the programming and television. You know, so you know, the detainees watch a lot of TV programming, so we're talking about having educational programming on all the televisions from 9 to 5. It's going to be looped, and from 5 on to 9 to the time they go to bed, it could be, you know, arbitrary, whatever you want to watch. Now, when I say educational program, of course, I think maybe the average age of a detainee might be 7, 8, educational level of a detainee probably ranges from 7th grade to sophomore, 7 to 11.
Mm.
So we would have, you know, courses, some might be lower than 7, but let's say the average educational level, 7th grade through 11. We will have educational courses being looped, history, math, civics, and you know how you see the same thing over and over on TV. So learning occurs as a result of repetition. You know that. So they, now some of those that really don't want to learn nothing ain't even gonna watch it. Now those are hardcore, don't want to learn nothing. But some people, but they don't realize that that's what it's all about. So we're gonna have some sort of a lot of programs that we can probably have purchased that's gonna, you know, and it's simple learning for them, history. African-American history, U.S. history, world history, and science, elementary science, and just facts, and, you know, just sociology, psychology, simple level of that stuff that can be understood by those at their educational level. So just all educational facts being coming on TV between 9 and 5, I think that's going to be remarkable. You know what I mean? That's going to be remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's going to be remarkable.
That really makes the jail productive. I mean, the time served, what good does it serve the public to just have somebody locked up and learning how to be a worse criminal? If they can come out better than they went in, that would be phenomenal. I think
we will impact a percentage.
Yes.
And it will impact the recidivism rate, and it will impact the crime rate in our communities. You know, so, and that's a good thing. The speakers that come into the jail, now we have ex-game members come in, motivational speakers, they're going to be able to say their thing, what they want to message. Of course, we're going to examine what their message is, and I'm going to give them a message of self-determination or getting involved in the community and being political and being, you know, stuff like that. So I'm going to have speakers come to jail, but they're going to have a message that I'm going to give them. I'm not going to take it their message, but they're going to have a message that I'm going to give them to, that they have to say to these guys. You know what I mean? So I'm going to have a lot of speakers in there. So I plan, you know, the jail, we're going to hit, because that'll have a great impact. It'll show that it'll be worth its weight in gold, because it manifests itself again in a lower recidivism rate and a lower crime rate. It'll probably be felt. But those things like that, I plan to establish in the county jail, like within the county jail. So I really see myself as what they call a, I'm a crime fighter, but I'm a community sheriff too. I'm a people person.
Mm.
It's all about that and stuff. So those are the main three issues. Now, talking about overcrowding, which is another issue you wanted to address. Now, there's a lot of key solutions to overcrowding, but the main two key solutions to overcrowding was the sheriff department had what we call was I-bonds. I-bonds are like a recognizance bond where the sheriff could let you out on your own recognizance, and people get them every day for traffic offenses or stuff like that. You know, you get an I-bond, you're driving without with a license or something, you get an I-bond. It's called individual bond, or sometimes we call them our bond, recognizance bond, on your own, let out on your own accord. You didn't have any money. So the sheriff had the sheriff had the ability to write I-bonds, and we have the electronic monitoring program. Now, what the sheriff did was, and here in Cook County, the sheriff has been feuding with the chief judge, Tim Evans, as well as the county board president, Tony Prickwick,
about
this electronic. Now, that's because he wanted to abdicate it, which means turn it over to somebody else. So because politically, I guess maybe he's want to seek a higher office. And when you're in charge of electronic monitoring and you let somebody out and they continue to sell drugs or they go shoot somebody, they go rob a place, or they commit a crime, that's a political liability against you.
Mm.
So the sheriff, as opposed to trying to manage his overcrowding situation, he wanted to get rid of it. So he wants somebody else to be in charge of it. So if somebody gets let out on Abon, I didn't let him out. Tim Evans let him out. President Prickwick will let him out. You know what I mean? So he didn't want that liability.
Ah.
You follow what I'm saying?
I think the word is that
the President Prickwinkle is going to hire some retired judge to serve as a panel to review criteria. We don't need all that. We know that ain't nothing. How much you going to pay them? That's extra money in the budget. We could bring it right back home to me, the sheriff. We can handle that. It's going to be the same criteria: non-violent offenses, burglars, possession cases, petty theft, disorderly conduct, criminal trespassing. Now, and then you might get electronic monitoring if you have a gun possession on you. In Luau, it ain't going to be no big thing because next week or next month is concealed carry. But if you had a gun in your car, good record, you're a working person, but you carried a gun and weren't arrested, you might get electronic monitoring because you don't have a criminal history, but you was carrying a gun. And we're not talking about ex-offenders with a gun. So some gun cases fit into that category, too, because of the nature of the circumstances. You were caught going into your house with a gun, or you know, and you 45 years old, you're not a gangbanger, you know what I mean? You're probably for protection, even though you know it's illegal to carry. So a lot of even gun cases might even fit the category. So the same category that I would have as a sheriff is the same category that Prickwinkle would have or Tim Evans. I want electronic monitoring back in its rightful place, which is under the jurisdiction of the sheriff. And you use that to control by letting people out that fit the criteria, and they have some place to go, you know, and you let them out electronic. And then they use I-bonds, you know. If you're in here for a theft, you got caught in cars and stealing, you had $500 worth of stuff, we're going to let you out on I-bond. I ain't going to try to keep you 60 days to go to court, and you had two suits, you know. You're a good thief. You're a good booster, as we call it in Chicago. You know, we're going to let you out. I'm not saying we're going to, I don't want them to get the criminal and say, well, hey, we're going to get an I-bond. We're going to do this. I don't want that to be the thought, neither of the criminal. Oh, we're going to do this.
Right, there's got to be some
bond.
Kind of.
We're going to get an I-bond anyway. I don't want that to set that message, send that message out either. So you got to be careful, you know, with that. You know, one of the things is a revolving door because of the overcrowding situation. So you would have to use a lot of discretion
It also looks like that you plan to involve a lot of people in the process of fighting crime. I see that you're looking to activate an 800 hotline number for citizens to report gang crime, drug trafficking, child pornography, prostitution, domestic violence, and crimes against senior citizens. So people who see things and have maybe hesitated to call police, they hesitate because you're trying to be anonymous and you report drug trafficking on your corner. The police come to your door, stand on your porch and say, are you the one that called about the drug trafficking? So now
these people don't call because they're not trying to be exposed like that.
Those are insensitive police officers, too. Insensitive police officers too. Now let's tell you something.
I've had it happen to me. You know, I've had it happen to me.
Yeah. Your neighbor down the street called us on you. That's crazy. You know.
So that's another thing. Code of silence develops among citizens because they don't feel like their anonymity is protected, and they don't want to be fingered as the snitch and all of that, and in retaliation and so forth. So that's what's kept people from getting involved. So how will that 800 hotline number maintain people's anonymity but also enable them to really, especially when they see potential violent crimes in process or, as you mentioned, things like the child pornography, prostitution, you know, things that are destructive to people, how will that hotline number help them report it and yet keep them anonymous?
By way of town hall meetings, and radio interviews, television interviews, more radio interviews than really town hall meetings, we're going to get the message out about the 800 number. And see, I'm going to be a community shift, as I stated earlier. I'm going to get out there and let them know there will be confidentiality. Confidentiality will be kept. So I'm going to have to get the people to trust me. So I got a big and trust, and then they're going to tell you, oh, Baker's just another politician. But I think as people get to know me and feel me, and as my record begins to, as I begin to build a record of trust, I think that's going to take off, you know, because it's going to be a lot of confidentiality in terms of who called the 800 number. But I think that the vehicle is going to be town hall meetings countywide, either in churches or schools. So we'll set that up with an emphasis, of course, on the high crime areas, but countywide, I'd rather say that. Through getting on these talk shows, pushing that 800 number and pushing that, and any officer comes to you, we'll have a call internal affairs. And see, when it comes to officers doing stuff like that now, police are going to get complaints. Police officers are going to get complaints. The sheriff's going to get complaints. If Officer Baker's name comes up about five times or being three complaints about me roughing up somebody on a traffic stop or cussing somebody out, you know, okay, well, after that third time, if Officer Baker's name comes up six, seven times, we're going to start looking at Officer Baker. Because, come on now. It might be false complaints. They may be lies. But after about six or seven complaints and you still come in the same category, same type behavior, let's give him a look. Now, you could test officers through integrity checks. We could set them up with a false scenario, have somebody else call. You know what I mean? We could do have them stop somebody. You know what I mean? It's a whole lot of calling integrity checks.
Did this
observe? Yeah. Actually, we can call an officer to a scene that's really a setup scene and see how he behaves himself.
Don't all the cars have cameras now? I mean, all the cars got cameras,
but you know how guys get on. I think the humans got to turn them on, though, Naima. We got to turn them on and turn them off.
Yeah, you got to turn it on.
You understand what I'm saying? The human officer got
to. If you're something underhanded, you might not turn it
off. You don't have your camera going, man. Get that camera off. You know, so, and police corruption is another issue that we don't want to deal with. To probably my second term, I'm going to get into that one. I want to get in before I start talking about police corruption. So, but anyway. Mm. But that's a heavy one.
Kick some people up.
Yeah, I better get in first.
I think that is a crucial thing, is getting you in to implement these things.
Right. I don't want, you know, right.
One last question about this 800 number, because I know every phone has a caller ID. The checks and balances so people can't make false reports. Like, we know who you are. We're not going to expose you, but... You know, you can't just lie on somebody, just stand on the corner minding their own business and you call and say, oh, I see a drug traffic situation, and then police come and rough up somebody just waiting on a bus, you know, that kind of thing.
Let me give it out in a scenario. Miss Jones calls the 800 number. She reports narcotics being sold on her corner. Let's give Chicago 79th and Emerald in Chicago now. The officer on the phone takes the name and information, and he gives Ms. Jones a number. Ms. Jones, we're going to refer you to, since it's 2014-007 or whatever call she is, 00305, whatever, you know what I mean? She'll be given a year and the number of calls in that year that she is. We're going to refer to you as this number. When you call us back, refer to this number, and then we know how to identify your case, your call. So that's pretty much how, something like that, that's pretty much the idea how I have. And
so each call will have a specific number. So
we're gonna assign her a number at the when she comes in its inception. A number will be assigned to the caller to identify herself and that case report and all information that's associated with that incident. See, so now, I'm going to be a stickler. And see, understand something. It's going to be a lot of African-Americans involved. It's qualified. And I want to say that. I don't want to say that as if because people might think it's going to be the quote-unquote N-word department. Negro. No, this is going to be a multi-department. I'm going to find a lot of black talent, okay, to come in the department, and I'm going to promote up the ranks like that because the sheriff department has 6,000 jobs, Naima, and I award more than $40 million in contracts. I'm going to find a lot of black talent to help run that department. I'm going to be diverse, and I'm going to be fair, but I'm going to find a lot of black talent to run that department. You know, so I'd like to say that, and I'm not going to be no shame. I hope not to be in court a discrimination lawsuit, but it's a lot of black. Right now, Dart is doing the same thing. There's very few blacks in position of power. It's not a lawsuit there, you know. So
right.
I'm not coming in firing white people or Spanish people or Asian people, you know. But I'm just saying, as attrition sets in, you know, and or people go on their way, retire or resign or whatever. You know, I'm going to try to bring in some qualified black talent, you know. And at the same time, I always have to stress, I'm going to be fair. It's about everybody.
Yeah.
So, but I want to have blacks to learn how to write a county budget. I want blacks to be involved in the management scenario so I can help create other black leaders from other areas. You follow what I'm saying? I got to, especially my budget, I don't just want other members of other ethnic groups running. I want somebody black in there learn how to do the budget of the sheriff department. You learn this.
I want blacks to learn every facet of
the sheriff's department. We're going to learn every facet of the sheriff's department. Whether or not we are the boss or not, we're going to be in the room. We're going to be learning everything.
I think that's important. Definitely.
It's
definitely
important, yeah.
Well, we're gonna,
important.
Absolutely. We need to be in the room. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we come back and we'll take some calls from our listeners. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naeem Ortiz. We've got with us Sylvester Baker, who is candidate for Cook County Sheriff, and he's got a vision for the future that you need to hear. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. If you want to join our conversation, if you're listening online, press 1 when you're ready to join in. We'll be right back after this quick break, and we'll take some of your calls, so stay with us.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happens to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naeemalatif.com. That's www.naeemalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book. Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma.
Hey, my name is Dolphin Norris. I'm with Life Builders United. You can reach us on lifebuildersunited.org. Our theme is to build families, to build community. Our philosophy is on a four-legged stool of self-sufficiency, and that is build where you live, grow what you eat, sow what you wear, and buy where you own. That ends slavery. Thank you.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, hosts John Alexander and Naeema Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch the Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naeema Latif.
Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we've got with us candidate for Cook County Sheriff, Sylvester Bate. Will he be the new sheriff in town? Well, in the upcoming election, we've got some choices to make, and it comes down to what we want to see in our community, in our city, in our state, in our county, but most of all, in our people. Well, let's take some calls and get some insight and questions from our audience, and I believe we've got Brother Minister Robert Floyd Plump on the line. Thank you for joining us. Go right ahead with your question or comment for Professor Baker.
We are in Yah Shalom, Ahura, we don't die, we multiply. Salam alaikum.
Salam, brother.
Peace and blessings to you.
Peace.
Yes, sir. This is Minister Robert Floyd Plump, and I first of all want everybody to know that I'm punching five, 9 to 5, 9 to 5, 9 to 5, nothing but 9 to 5, you know, so we can come alive, and everybody, when they punch 9 to 5, we get rid of the jive. The jive is Tom Dog, and he done got about $3 million plus lawsuits on it, and everybody know that for us, the community, and for us, the people is concerned, we have 5 Tom Dark and all the Markham Toms with us. So, Sheriff Baker, it is indeed an honor and a privilege, because I can say that now, because you are the new sheriff. You know, we just going to have to manifest it to reality that it is truly time for you know, a new sheriff, and that is just like we had Mayor Washington. We had nobody but Harold, and you want Harold, you got him. So we got nobody but Baker. We want him, and we're going to have to get him in the seat by pressing 95, and everybody's going to have to help get out the vote, just like we did with President Barack Obama. You know, it wasn't no drama with Obama. Then I don't believe it's going to be no drama with Baker. So if the
you're telling the slogan man for the campaign, huh?
Yes, sir.
You know, because Mayor Washington said we must plump the whole community, which really means all of a sudden in peace, love, and unity by getting out the vote in the whole community, and also I see that Sheriff Baker got a vision, and vision equals to 23. You know, Sister Naima, I've always come on the program and said that you just like Oprah Winfrey to me, because you're probably the greatest in the past, the present, in the future. And yet, you know, I see when you add up 95 in order to get rid of the jive, so you got 1 + 4 = 5, and then you got 2 + 3. You know, is 5. So he's a 23 personality, and he's my hero. I want everybody to know.
Well, I do appreciate that. But you know, you said something that I want to address, though, also. You mentioned the lawsuits going on, and there have been a lot of upheavals that haven't been addressed by the current sheriff. And could you address that bit, some of the lawsuits against the county that probably should not have come about, or perhaps should have been handled better. One of the issues that came up with, of course, the cemetery that was, I guess, recycling graves and digging up bones and all that sort of thing. I haven't heard a follow-up, an appropriate follow-up to that situation, which many people felt that the Sheriff's Department should have handled a little strongly. What are some of the issues that have come up that you would perhaps handle differently once you're elected?
Just in talking about, now we're talking fiscal responsibility, the sheriff has cost county taxpayers in his 8 years over $11 million in lawsuit settlements, right? They just paid out $2.4 million, if I'm correct, because he retaliated against some county officers for supporting another candidate in that, you know, the last election. And then also we just had Sheriff Sheehan, who was his mentor, who actually brought him to the party, as we say, who got him, who gave him, made him his assistant, which led him to being the sheriff. And actually Sheriff Sheehan lobbied the county board for his endorsement, you know. So so Sheriff Sheehan actually brought him to the, as we say in our neighborhood, to the party. And he turned his back on him. That's a lawsuit from Sheriff Sheehan's nephew. But as we go back to the Burr Oak issue, which really got him in the office last time, because how he clearly played on the black community. And see, political strategists, and I think you know, and Minister Plump know as well, that politicians play on the strategy is to play on the emotions of the black community. Don't make them mad. Make them happy. All this going through a heated election, you got them. And see, black people don't know. They're not going to say nothing about, you know, then anything. But going specifically back to Burr Oak is in, notice how I said, Burr Oak, remember I said the Sheriff's Department, Sheriff's Police Patrol, unincorporated Cook County? Burr Oak was an unincorporated Worth Township. That was our responsibility to patrol. Now, the situation is that, And as a sum up, naturally, all the cemeteries in suburban Cook County, the sheriff's office supposed to patrol. And we call them premise checks. That means every shift, 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7, the officers patrolling that area are supposed to drive through it, just like an officer supposed to drive down your block twice a day on his 8-hour shift. That's the theory behind patrol. Cover all your area two or three times a shift. But no, do you see a police two or three times come down your block? No. We patrol certain parts of our beat, the parts we like to go down. But in the suburbs, again, the cemeteries fall under the jurisdiction of the sheriff. Burr Oak fell under the jurisdiction of the Cook County Sheriff Department. And my point is, the officers will support every shift at least one time ride through the cemetery. The officers work in Worth Township, that unincorporated area, did not ride through the cemetery. Now, where am I going? What I'm saying is, if I'm Officer Baker of Patrol Burr Oak, on my shift every day like I'm supposed to, when I'd have seen that trash piled up over there or some suspicious in the area and reported it or wrote it up or went inside and talked about it, because we never went through it and looked at the cemetery. It's just like if you see, it would have looked suspicious to me. What I'm saying is because our officers did not fail to patrol or premise check the cemetery during their 8-hour tour duty, we didn't know there was anything suspicious going on. So, and what I'm saying is, had we done our due diligence, our job, we would have noticed some suspicious about Burr Oak and would have caught that earlier, much, much sooner than we did. Now, could we have stopped the crime? Question mark. I don't know, but we would have caught it so much earlier. And when he came out as the white knight in shining armor, and look at this one. This one got me. You know, and I'm going to say this one slow so your listeners can follow this one. You know, if there's a crime in your house, the police are not going to let you go in there. I'm sorry, Mr. Baker, you can't go in there. There's been a crime committed in there. It's a crime scene.
Right.
You cannot. I don't care if it's your property or not. Burr Oak was a crime scene. Burr bodies, you know, he let black people trample all over the graves and get all emotionally.
Oh, man.
I got to be emotional when I say this. Not even. He let us trample all over the graves and go all over and cry and sigh up. And then on day five, hey, y'all, it's a crime scene. Y'all can't come out here no more. We weren't supposed to come out there day one. You let us come out there on the same channel. I hate to get emotional. He let us come out there and walk over these graves, get all hot. And then day five, he
falls
inside,
all
a crime
over the
scene,
place,
y'all.
No,
y'all can't come out here no more. Did you see that? I couldn't get the word out. I was running at that time because black people were too overwhelmed. You know what I mean? He came across as a white knight in shining armor, but he tricked us. He played on our emotions, and it worked. And I'm still mad about it today.
Oh, my.
Still mad about it. And everybody remember that. All of a sudden, y'all can't go. Y'all can't walk no more. It's a crime scene. Wasn't it a crime scene day one, Sheriff? Or are you just, you lack so much police experience? Why you let us walk all over the body? Everybody went to the body. And then, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, y'all can walk around and get all heated up emotionally. But Friday is a crime scene, y'all. No, it's a crime scene now. You can't go on it. I hate to feel that. But it's a crime scene. So he was playing a game with us, and now here I come, y'all. I'm gonna do everything, and that And that function, oh, he, you know, that function, he worked that. Politically, he worked it. He worked it 100%.
Oh, yeah, he definitely worked that borough.
He worked it 100% on our community so bad, and I wanted to expose that so bad, but I couldn't get the media, I couldn't get the word out like I could. He worked it, and it got him back in office. You know, he ran our emotions up and got us all geeked up and then said no more, you know. So, but when it comes back to it, as I said in the starting of this point, that we dropped the ball as county sheriffs by not patrolling the place and reporting any suspicious activity because we didn't go in there. We didn't ride through there. If your door is wide open and coming down your block, the police will never come down your block. You don't know your garage door up or your front door up because he ain't never rolled down your block. Every officer supposed to cover every – when we got beats. All police departments divide the area into beats. It's a beat officer. You supposed to cover all the area on your
beat.
At least three times. At least three times. You ride down – and a good officer will ride down the alleys. But you know the officers, they sit here, they got a good spot on their beat, they sit to kill some time. That's city and county, and city and suburb. All officers, some parts they beat, they don't ride down. Now, you got 8 hours, you should be riding down everything, getting out the way, riding down, then ride down again, ride down some alleys. Then sit in the hot spots on your beat. If you know they're selling drugs or gang activity, go sit on that corner, break it up. Yeah, just the presence of the car going to break it up. You know what I mean? But he tricked us in that one, and I'm still emotional and a little angry about that today. But our people,
you know, they know how to get us. They know how to.
Strategy is play on their emotions. You know, play on their emotions.
It works.
You know, keep them cool, keep them calm. Especially when the mayor coming up, they're not gonna say nothing bad about Black County because you say the wrong thing. Or you gonna get us riled up now, and then we, you know, really gonna come out of the road. You give them emotional, they're going to come out and go. Keep them sleeping, don't say nothing. Try not to get into no hot, especially don't get into no racial debates, because that's going to wake them all up, and they all going to come out and vote, and we're going to lose. It's a control of the emotional state of the Black voter during election. Control that emotional state.
Wow.
Keep it rather subdued and not angered. You know, remember I'm a PhD in psychology, so you know I'm on that aspect of, you know, I am. But just so we know what spectrum I'm coming from, the listeners do, and that's what they do. When we angry, we take care of business. You know that,
right?
We ain't okay. You know, we go back to Henry Hand and the Black Panther. Remember Henry Hand and the Black Panthers? Good example. Henry Hand and the Black Panther. When we voted for Kerry over Henry Hand, Kerry was Republican. Remember?
Yes.
Hand in hand with
a
Democrat and led that Black Panther raid and sticking out over there on Monroe.
My household.
Oh, yeah.
We voted for Kerry,
who was a Republican, over hand in hand as a result of that Black Panther raid. Everybody know that in 69. And yes, we did, because we were angry about that Black Panther raid. And Black folks voted Republican for Kerry. Got him in. I swear that. Other than that, we don't touch that hour. There's a lot of germs on that hour, you know.
As a child, hearing
I voted.
To be able to, you know, switch over.
I didn't get to vote in 71. The 69, I was 15. I was voting 71. When it first came out, when 18 got the right to vote, I was hitting 18. But I remember I was a student enough to know, because a lot of high school students are Black members of the Black Panther Party. We had Black Panthers in our high school. Not getting up the sheriff's rate, but they created the breakfast program that's used nationwide now. They don't get the credit for it, though. Think about
it.
The breakfast program, they started that. They don't get the credit for that, you know. But back to the sheriff's rate. But no, the whole strategy is playing on our emotion. And the current sheriff, he was an acting politician at that. Like, now he's keeping his mouth. The eviction piece. Now, sad as it is, that's the sad part. I don't want to say I want to evict people, but you got two sides. You got the landlord that's not getting paid. I ain't talking about the eviction as a result of a foreclosure and you paying you rent the house. Now, when you rent the house and you rent the house and your landlord's in foreclosure, he don't tell you and you get evicted. Now, that's wrong. I can see not getting
right.
evicted for that.
Right.
But if you rent an apartment and you ain't paid in 6 months, the landlord got bills. So it's two sides to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
The landlord's got a mortgage. He got to pay bills, and you can't just live free. I know you might have met hard times, but, you know, it's social services in place for that. You got to go stay with a relative. You got to stay with a shelter.
Right.
or something like that. And I'm not heartless. But what he did with black folks on that moratorium, he made them think they weren't evicted no more. What that was, and I say it wasn't a bad thing, with those blacks or those people who were paying their landlord and renting a house and that was a foreclosure unbeknownst to them, yes, they shouldn't be evicted. I thought that was a good thing. But he spread it out like he stopped eviction. Oh, no, Sherry Dark, now moratorium on eviction. There ain't no moratorium on eviction. Don't sit there and put that out with people like that. Because if a judge signs an eviction order, you got to do it. I got to do it if I'm the sheriff. You know, you can't violate a judge order. So I don't, he kind of put it out there whereas he has the power not to evict. No, the judge signed an eviction.
So was that a bit of deception then?
It was a deception. Good thing initially because I agree with the fact that no person who's paying rent to a home that you're renting should be evicted because you was unbeknown. You know, you're totally in the dark about the situation. Yes, I believe that, but don't come across like you put eviction, and then it lasts of about, I think, the moratorium. It might have went a month or so, but it was put out there as far as PR, like he just stopped evictions. And so then, but anybody that knows the law know better, you know, but our community is naive. You know, all we know, their daughter ain't doing evictions no more. But our people, I love them, you know how we are, so bless their hearts, but is just how it is, but it was deceptive in the nature of deception. Put in a message intentionally. Intentional deception. Some of it was true in terms of the moratorium on those who, again, the situation was if you're renting a home that's in foreclosure. Not you got the third floor apartment and you ain't paid for 5 months. I think you about to get put out. Don't have people thinking that. You know what I mean? You know that was clearly for those in the situation of renting a home or a condo, anything, and they went into foreclosure. You will be spared. You still have, and then they would give you, the courts would probably give you another 90 days. Now you are aware that this house is going to foreclosure and you have to find something. It ain't forever. You know what I mean? And the court would say, boom, you have 90 days to find something. Now you're aware that this house is foreclosure. How much time do you need? Is 90 days sufficient for you to find the house? If you're paying your rent, that $1,000 that you're paying him, you can because you're not out of work. It is not, your situation wasn't non-payment. You were just being deceived, you know. So you can find another.
So there
another,
are some things that the sheriff office can do within the law and regulations when it's not a person's fault. Then
right now that was a good thing. That was a good thing, you know. So that he done there. That was a good thing. And then you know, and you look at, and this is some things that are going on just among the officers now. And this is more of an internal issue. The work schedule. The guys that got less than 5, 10 years, they off on Wednesday and Thursday, Tuesday. You pick your off days based on your seniority number. So those people with 20 years or more, maybe with 18 years or more, probably can get Saturday and Sunday off. Okay, now I got 7 years. I'm off on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, you know, everything, my children's birthday parties, my church stuff, everything is on Saturday and Sunday. Now you're telling me I got to be sick on Saturday and Sunday. Now, what am I saying? I'm saying that when I started at the jail back in 1982, we were on a 4-2 schedule, work 4, off 2. Now, with that kind of schedule, a 4-2 or 4-3, you rotate the weekends. Anybody get weekends. Maybe I work 4 weeks and I get weekends for 3 weeks in a row. You follow what I'm saying? Or 2 weeks in a
row. Right.
So the work schedule of the officers was going to go back to, and this is going to involve discussion within the unit. I can do it. You know, the stroke of a pen, but we, you know, you have to give union notice. So I want to take
well,
the work
Well, I guess a lot of things. I guess a lot of changes that you have to institute. Some people may balk at that, and that's part of coming in and making changes. But then,
yeah,
of course, there are some things that will be welcomed because they may not have been in the best interest of the workers there anyway. So, you know, that everything involves people accepting the change, you know, and those who may be resistant. But we've got some other callers, of course, that want to talk, give them an opportunity to talk to you express some questions and comments. I believe we've got Brother Gator, Mr. Wallace Bradley on the line. Thank you so much for joining us. You're on with
Hey,
Sylvester Bishop, candidate for Cook County.
Hey,
wonderful, wonderful. Baker. Thanks so much for calling.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah, hey, Baker, you got my vote. I want to let everybody know I fully support Baker. But guys have been walking down the street coming and letting me know that they supporting you. That's a wonderful feeling. And I let them know that we go all the way back to Calumet. You supported me. Constant.
That's right.
So that it don't get misconstrued. What Doc did to his sponsor is disrespectful, but what he did to the community, in our community, by making fools of us in our community. Mm-hmm. And you 100% on it. I think what we need to focus on is letting people know that we as a people have a right and got the power to elect you sheriff of Cook County. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They need to dump they blunts and go vote. You know what I'm saying? Early vote, John Monty Thurman. Early vote. I mean, you know, we got to keep it 100.
Right. That's right.
We got to keep it 100. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is you're doing, you can vote early, starting March the 3rd.
Now, were you listening to his initiatives when he talked about bringing in men to assist in the process, you know, training and deputizing men who can then be the eyes and ears for the community and take that position of strength? Were you listening to that part of his initiative? And how do you think men on the street will respond to that?
That's a public safety initiative, okay? If an individual is willing to adhere to the rules of Cook County to be law-abiding citizens, they should be allowed to do that. And I'm saying that to say this. When I read about what happened in Harvey and all those, the federal government, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, the state knew it was happening. It was the sheriff's responsibility, and Baker know I'm telling the truth, mm-hmm. to go in there and be right. about a straight justice and public safety initiative. That's you know right. what I'm saying? They have their insurance. I mean, they have their intelligence mechanism. They know what was happening in Harvey.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So for them to let the crime go rampant like it was going in Harvey, inclusive of murders as well as the selling of drugs, they knew that. That was his responsibility.
That's right. That's right, Gabe.
You know, I'm right or wrong, right?
And like Gator said, we all ran together in high school, had big fun. And Gator was a good student in high school. That Gator Bradley was something else that came in. We was dancing and doing all the good things, and we were concerned about the community then. And Gator knows that. And all of us ran together. We all ran together.
Right.
It was a whole group of us that all ran together in high school. And we was aware of what was going on in our community at that point in time, you know. And Gator knows that we all had our little stuff and our little groups and things like that, dressing and doing things. And it's nice to reminisce on that and to take it back now and look at how Gator has come such a long way from a street person to a community activist, pardon, degrees and everything in high school. And he's a warrior out here trying to get things straight, a peacemaker. You know, we in touch on a daily basis anyway, because they know.
Right.
I know Gator's commitment to the community, and Gator knows my commitment
to
the community. See, so I appreciate that, Gator. But you know, I know you support me all the time. Without you coming on radio and saying, you know, I know that.
Hey, but you know, I listen in on this sister show constantly, man. This is my morning tea. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm listening on the show. Right. I was glad to hear you. You know what I'm saying? I was glad to hear the Minister Crump, because we kick it if we run into each other at White Castle. You know what I'm saying? So
mm-hmm.
I'm just saying it's time for the voters to realize that here's a chance to bring or to elect a sheriff that's going to be concerned about everyone in Cook County, black,
mm-hmm.
white, or Hispanic. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? And
that's
he's
right.
not a Republican. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
we got a chance to make the difference right now. I mean, when you see Daly's nephew, they commit a crime in Cook County and go to McHenry County and then tell McHenry County, don't worry about it. He'll pay for his stay like it's a hotel. We got to come out. Black voters got to come out. You follow what I'm saying? When we see what happened in Florida, the man don't get charged with don't get sentenced for the murder. He gets sentenced for attempt murder. But when the two little brothers, and they were wrong, that stuck up that that guy at the gas station,
yeah,
and the officer did the right thing, and killed the guy that was trying to kill him. But they gave the other his accomplice. They charged his accomplice with murder. You follow what I'm saying? So it's an unequal justice system, and the only way to change that, put someone in there that's going to be fair.
That's right.
Put justice for all. You know, it's just so simple.
You're sure right,
you know, if we, it's the time for choking is over. The time for voting is now.
That's right.
Well, you know, you mentioned something, Mr. Baker. You mentioned something that we know is true, is that we do things when we're angry. And everybody's been talking about this Florida case and the injustice and all of that. But we haven't really quite seized the energy of that anger and put it toward voting in the next election. How do we harness the hurt that people feel about the injustices that have happened, about the targeting of our youth for jail and incarceration? How do we harness that energy and focus it on putting someone in office that is going to stand for justice, particularly because people haven't always understood the tie between the one who's in office and making the decisions and the kinds of decisions that we see happening on the street? How do we harness that anger?
Well, it goes back to educating our people. You know, it goes back to educating. We just not, I won't say miseducate, we just not aware. And a lot of times black people don't know what's going on. They really bring it back to the sheriff department. A lot of black people don't really know about the sheriff department. What do we do? What do they do? They evict people. They protection in the jail or in the court. They don't really know the extent of it. And sometimes not knowing is also not caring. You know, so we have to have a massive educational process going on, which means just regular common conversation. You know, we might not be able to have rallies or forums to educate our black people. Just, you know, word of mouth, and which is kind of a hard process, I know, just saying it, but it's going to have to be a massive educational process put into play and just through just regular networks just with what's going on, because we're just not educated. I don't want to say misinformed. We're not informed, you know. So we are putting together a strategy how to get that out. We're going to need so many vehicles, you know, word of mouth, social media, phones, forums, meetings, churches. You know, so many ways to do that, but if we get enough people involved in and see, that's when I become sheriff. I'm going to use the sheriff's office as a platform. Now, I might talk about an elected school board. I might come out my square and say, hey, we need an elected school board in Chicago. You follow what I'm saying? We need something else. You know what I mean? That's discrimination there. I'm not in there. See, the sheriff's office is a platform for me. You follow?
Yes.
I'm
going to
handle
all of
the law enforcement. I'm going to handle my law enforcement piece, but I'm going to step out my lane, which all is my lane because I'm black. I'm going to step out of my law enforcement lane over to the, you know, like school board lane or some other lane, discrimination lane, or construction jobs or blacks lane. You follow what I'm saying?
Because everything is all tied together. The education.
Right, see, so I might be talking about construction jobs for blacks. I might be talking about construction jobs for blacks as a sheriff because unemployment and crime is strong correlation, right?
Yeah,
okay.
And,
you know, no job, we commit crime. The lower the unemployment rate is, the lower the crime rate gonna be. You follow what I'm saying? That's a proven correlation there. You know, look it up. So I'm coming out my lane off the farm. Okay, we're talking about construction jobs. We're talking about school board. I'm really redundant, but I'm just saying anything that's out there that's issue, I'm gonna be a part of. See, I'm retired already. I'm not getting this job to get no money. This is my calling. I ran 3 times. I care. And I already got a pension, and I teach for the board. I teach for college, and I'm assistant director of security. I work for the city. And I'm saying what I'm saying,
so,
I work for the city.
So
this
is the mission that you're on.
If I get retired, I got what we call a check for life. My pension better be in my bank account on the first of every month. I've got, you know, I ain't in this for no money to get rich. I'm okay. I mean, I ain't going to stop. So I'm in. Right. I'm on a mission. I love my people.
Well,
I'm going to do all I can to help. I'm not in it to get to save up $1 million, all that. I'm in it to help. You know, so
well, that,
I'm already
that's
okay.
Powerful. That is powerful. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm in this thing to help.
All right. Well, that's what we need for every elected official to be in it for, not for the money, but for the service.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk to Kala Chakra One. Go right ahead. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment for Sylvester Baker.
Hello. My name is Geyer Smith, and I'm calling from France. I live really close to Paris, like halfway between Paris and the English Channel. And seeing you people are in Illinois and in Chicago, I had a question about President Obama, you know, because when you're looking from France, you think about Obama coming from Chicago, and so you think like Illinois, Chicago.
Yes.
So when I saw your radio talk, I thought, well, I'm going to talk to some people who are in Chicago. You know, you people probably know Obama.
Color Chakra One, yes, we do.
So I was wondering about one thing people say that Obamacare is being very bad for Obama and that his numbers are going down. So what does the community say in Chicago? Is Obama popular, or has he gone down a little bit in for people?
Well, you know, I think, and I thank you for that question, but that's also part of what we look at in Chicago. President Obama has been part of the process of raising consciousness politically and the changing of focus from reaction to action. So with the Obamacare, that's, as we say, everything is connected. People suffering because they don't have the right income, people suffering because they don't have jobs, people suffering because they don't have training. So President Obama is, just like Sheriff Baker, part of the new mindset that we have to put proactive people in office, and we have to address the problems that create the problems, such as not having jobs or not having access to education, and knowing that this is the direct effect on crime. So, I thank you so much for that call from France. And yes, we are personally familiar with President Obama, knew him before he went into office, and knew him when he was a community activist. Some of the activists here knew him when he was a community activist, knew him when he was elected to
state
the
Senate.
State Senate, and then later
if I could just add in there to Mr. Smith, he's still very popular in the African-American community, because we understand that all of his initiatives, or the majority of his initiatives, are being blocked by the Republican Party. They want to stop this man in his tracks, and that's understood by the black community, probably nationwide, I would say. And think about it, you have a lot of free health care in many countries in Europe, and that's all that he's trying to get here in America, free health care. How could you be that evil not to want free health care here in America? So when you see a group of people trying to block free health care, that just raises a question within itself. But I would say just reiterating what Naima said, yeah, he's very popular. We know him. We love him. We probably understand his frustrations, too.
And that brings up another question, because there often is resistance to progress and change. Now, a lot of the initiatives that you talked about, when you talk about putting, you know, bringing in programs, bringing in training, bringing in education, and no, the jail is not a school, but there is an opportunity to turn it into a place of education, training, reformation, and all of those things. There are people who don't share that view. They see people who are locked up as you're in there for punishment, and you need to just do your punishment. We're not trying to raise you up. We're not trying to give you a college degree. We're not trying to do that. So how will you deal with opposition to the way that you plan to handle crime prevention by rehabilitating those who are locked up?
And I understand what you're saying. If I hear about Sheriff Baker training somebody that committed murder, not murder, but a crime to my family member, I got a problem with that too. So all of the family members of the victims might look at what I'm trying to do negatively. You follow? So even within our community,
yeah.
Like, hey, this guy guilty of doing it, broken in my house. Why is Baker trying to educate? But they got to,
yeah.
First of all, we got to think long term. We got to think long term.
Yeah.
And then, plus we have a system here. Once you serve your time, you know that's it. You know you're supposed to get all your rights and everything back as a citizen. But back to the question about being resistant. Now a lot of things. Now how much freedom is in my budget? What do I got to go to the county board for? Is what you're talking about. Most of the things I talked about, I want to sit and think. I think 99% of them I can do with my signature. So I don't think too much. Contracts over $25,000 got to go to the board. I could reorganize my apartment and bring in that community intervention network under the same model as ceasefire. I should be able to do that. I don't think, and that's going to clearly be managed directly by ex-offenders, as I said, because those guys got a pulse of the street and they know what's going on and they're going to help. The training program, I think it's going to be a tab on it with the training program. So we're talking about the first thing, of course, first order of business going in the door is a total analysis of my budget and a total analysis of my manpower. Where's all the bodies at? How much money do I have? You know, so after we do that, and so I get to learn my guidelines. And I don't think there's nothing I'm doing that's going to cause for county board approval. But I'm a people person and I'm a relationship builder. So I'm going to make sure I have make the county board members happy so that if I do have to go to them something, it's not going to be an issue because I'm going to make them happy and satisfied with what I'm doing and know that I'm on the right track and I'm about helping the citizens of Cook County. So I don't think I'm going to have that problem. I don't really see nothing. Everything I'm talking about is my money, and I know it's a lot of mismanagement. You got 20 lawyers walking around in OPS, you know, and really that's OPS is the county's investigative team. I can have seasoned officers doing that. I don't have to bring in 20 lawyers, all of them making over $75,000. That's $1 million right there. His friends, all the maternity brought in, you know, that don't really know what they're doing, you know. So those passionate hiring that he did that the news media is not talking about. So we're going to totally organize. Some, you know, I don't want to say heads going to roll because I don't want to say nothing like that. But the thing, reorganizing that department, looking at my numbers and looking at the programs that we got a lot of duplication programs. Like I told you, the jail has an academy, the police department has an academy, and of course they have an academy. We don't need three academies. That's because of the department's back. One academy for all the guys, for all officers. We don't need that. So we're talking about duplication is going to be cut out, you see. And, you know, so when I cut out all the duplication, we're going to do a thorough examination. And so that's money's going to come in. So I don't see, other than those people don't want to see me do anything. I'm going to say it straight. Don't want to really see me do anything to help the black community. It's going to have opposition because everything I'm talking about is helping the black community. So
yes.
I don't really see. You got to explain yourself. I go, why is it this? So I don't see nothing. If I got to go anywhere, nothing definitely had to go to Springfield that I'm talking about doing. You know, the police certification, that's a state issue, but the Illinois Law Enforcement Governmental Board, and what's wrong in terms of getting everybody police certified, we just got to have more classes because those guys, the deputies didn't have all the classes that the police had, so we want to get them to come back in and do that and so forth, and to them, so everybody have police status, not just deputy sheriff, just deputy sheriff and police there, everybody going to be police instead of deputy sheriff and police, so we're going to do that one. But everything I see, we kind of examined that when we have our team meetings, that what do we need? Nobody. We had to go out to the department. Everything I can do, you know. Now, they're going to probably fight me on that community intervention network, but I'm going to put that in my budget. You know, the 1,000 deputies going to scare white folks, those 1,000, but when they say, oh, no, they ain't going to have guns, you know. Oh, okay. You know, so 1,000 deputies, oh, 1,000 more black men with guns. Oh, no, you know. So, no, we got realistic. We set the table realistic, you know what I mean? So, and discuss this. So, but no, these guys, because of the liability issue, trying to get them armed, you know, they shoot somebody, you know, but I just want information officers, you know what I mean? So, and these will be seasoned guys, like veterans, retired police, retired sheriff, guys that care about the community. I'm going to try to give you a stipend for doing it. You know, you get 24 hours a week. Just like the National Guard. Like you go out radicating in your personal car. We're going to give you a radio. We'll probably pay your gas. I don't know how we're going to work that out because it's a logistics involved in that. Again, as I say, I'm delegating to somebody. This is what I want. This is my vision. Come on back with the plan. You know what I mean? So, and they'll come back with that because I'm going to clearly be giving vision to the members of the team that's going to deal with it. And they're going to bring me back the plan after hearing my vision of what I want done. So,
then most of the things that you have outlined.
A signature is in my power. Yes, sir. When I say signature to your listeners, I say my signature means they're within my power. Yeah. I'm quite sure most of mine, because that's what we thought about. But to be safe about it, we're going to network and create, you know, I'm going to be at events and the county board meetings and fundraising events for the county. I'm going to be friends with the county board members. I'm not going there to fight nobody. And I'm a peaceful person. I'm a friendly person. I'm a people person. I want to be friends because I know we're going to need them for something. You know, I'm going to stay within my budget. You know, I don't want to lose no positions I got that's currently in the budget because I'm going to need all of them, you know. So it's going to be interesting. And I feel a victory coming on, Naeem. I think the Lord is going to give me favor. I sense the Lord is going to give me favor this time and this one. And the good thing about it, I ain't taking no money. And see, let me tell you about the law enforcement side piece. Now I sense or feel that because as a result of me being community involved and take care of black people, I see that some evil forces might want to come and set me up and assassinate my character. You follow what I'm saying? Because I'm doing good things. I see that. That happens.
People can take everything you've done and twist it and make it sound
right. So we have to be very careful of those evil forces out there that's not going to like Baker hiring black people and Baker training black people and Baker trying to make good a community. They might think I want to. What is he aspiring for? He trying to be something else? He want to be the governor? Want to be the mayor? What is he trying to do? You know what I mean? So people try to read things.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be the sheriff and do good for the community. But I want to say to your listeners, I'm not going to take no money because I think the job pays over $100,000. Plus, I'm fine like I am. You know, I'm not going to be on YouTube in the bed with six women doing any kind of that stuff. So you're not going to get me in nothing. Don't even try. Don't even bring it. Don't try to set up. Don't bring the setup. I'm too slick. I'm too street savvy for the setup. You know what I mean? So leave the women and leave the money. Keep it. I mean, you know, when I say that, I'm talking about the setups. You know, so I already know the game.
Set you up for character.
Yeah, the evil forces. Let's call them the evil forces. Might attempt to set me up some kind of way, discredit me, or even try to say come to somebody, try to maybe a friend of mine. Say you let my friend George. Maybe somebody might come to George. You and Baker tight. Hey, I'm gonna give you $5,000. Can you get me a job? George is a good friend of mine. George might refer somebody to me that's qualified, and I give George a job. But George took some money from the FBI. And I don't know if George my man.
Then they'll say bribery.
George together. I gotta watch out for the setup coming from a lot of ways. You know, a lot of times it's going to come through people that know me who might take some money for a job because they have friendships with me and they might have a good referral for a position I'm looking for. And that referral might be an FBI agent or, my, you know what I mean, whatever. Mm. And they took some money unbeknown to me and I gave them a favor in the form of a job position and we all connected to taking some money, $5,000. So there's a lot of stuff we already know going
to
come at us. You follow what I'm saying? We just sat around the table and strategize about jobs. When people ask me for jobs, what's going on here? Everybody's going to be vetted. Everybody's going to be vetted. Because I don't want that coming at me, you know, in terms of I did a favor for a friend who, and they had a qualified candidate. It turned out to be the FBI, and you took some money. So and then now I'm looking like I'm splitting that money with. So this scenario we thought that could happen, how the way the power that be may come at me for doing a good thing, you know, for the community.
So we
speculate on a lot of possibilities that can happen. You follow what I'm saying, Naeem? So we're ready for this position. We're ready for this position. We're ready.
They're looking for the weak link, how they can set you up.
The weak link is what we got. Or the person that's angry at me. F. Baker. I'm setting them up. F. Baker. You know what I mean? So I ain't thinking about him, man. And what can I do to him? I want to bring him down.
Right.
I want to bring him down.
Right.
F. Baker. So we got to watch out. We that's on the drawing board. We know and we're aware of all that's going to happen. So I'm gonna have we're gonna be checking people. So and seeing where they're coming from. You know.
Well, you're definitely. Well, I want to ask you a question about that. Well, let me take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask about that initiative of hiring people who may have backgrounds. And also get your opinion on how that concealed carry law may increase the opportunities for violent crime, and how will the sheriff's office under you handle that? We'll be right back after this quick break. Those holding on, when you're ready to join our conversation, press 1. We're on with Sylvester Baker, who is the candidate for Cook County Sheriff, and we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we've been talking to Cook County Sheriff candidate Sylvester Baker. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. We're taking a look at what may happen once there's a transfer of power. And perhaps the focus will be more on crime prevention and rehabilitation of people as opposed to punishment. Now, we know that's a revolutionary thought for a lot of people who are looking at our community as just a horde of criminals that need to be locked up and locked away. How will you handle, the resistance and the opposition to hiring people with criminal backgrounds? Particularly, as you mentioned, people are looking for the weak link. They're looking for how they can set you up. Should someone who has made a mistake in the past and has a record get on your staff and do something that looks improper, do you have, people in place or a strategy in place to prevent the kind of assassination of your character or the portrayal of your administration as corrupt or inept because of the kind of people that you're hiring or people who have backgrounds that you're planning to hire? How will you spin your own media image to counteract what will be said about those who may be employed by your office who may have a past of having done time?
Okay, and that's a good question. Now, I think I would probably have my most problem with hiring someone who has a murder conviction and has done his time. Now, I talked about that community intervention network, that CIN. That's going to clearly be ex-offenders and probably be members of street organizations from Disciples, Vice, Lords, Souls, Stones. That's going because they're involved in those streets well. So that's going to be run. That's going to be directed by and ran by and worked by ex-offenders because they are the most affected. Now, on my staff, I'm going to have liaisons. I'm going to have a liaison with a criminal background because I'm going to need liaisons to ex-offenders because ex-offenders is the key when it comes to my rehabilitation program. I support a second chance for ex-offenders, and I'm going to stick by that. I say it now, and I'm going to show it then. Now, when I have someone, I think that hiring people, of course, we know that they can't get a sworn position. We know now you won't see because of the history. Unless they got a pardon, they got it sealed, by the governor, then we could probably maybe see if it works some of them, you know, because it's sealed and everything. But that might be. But those who have not had their records pardoned and sealed, and by the way, throw that in, we're going to push that, expungements and pardons and sealed, because people don't know you can get pardoned by the governor, even though he's sitting on 10,000 of them. But
yes.
He's sitting on them, yeah. But how, Gator knows, if Gator's listening, he knows about that. He was pardoned, you know, so, and sealed.
Yes.
But what I'm saying, that's going to be a somewhat of a struggle, but I'm going to do it. I expect to take a hit with the press with the hiring of ex-offenders, but I'm going to do it. Not just and probably some of them for custodial positions, some of them for positions that are not that non-sensitive, I think is the term I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But non-sensitive positions. For now, some I'm gonna have one or two on my staff. They're gonna be liaisons to the community. And I'm going to take that hit, you know, because, and they come down, and my staff, the blacks are not coming downtown in blue suits, pink suits, and 10 feet and 13-inch long shoes. No, we're not doing that, you know. They're going to be professionals, you know, and show the voters of Cook County and those who and their coworkers that they're professional, they have changed. You know what I mean? And stuff
so
like
no,
that.
No,
and
no sagging pants hanging under the rail.
No, you coming downtown. The brother's coming downtown, again, not with no yellow suit on, not with no lime suit on, no. With a nice conservative suit on, blue or gray, and some nice floors and shoes on, okay? We're gonna represent well. But no, I am going to catch heat, and I'm willing to take that heat and stand on it, you know what I mean? Because now, if I'm going to look into any laws or statutes that says I can't do that or what I can't do and what my limitations are, there waivers available? We'll get them. You follow? So just like you have a criminal background for nursing or CNA or something, you can get a waiver or something for positions and stuff like that. So we're going to find out, will I need a waiver? What law states that I can't hire an ex-offender? So we're going to know what the position is as far as state statute. You know, or maybe they can't say county ordinance too. You know, but so having reviewed all that and know what our position is, we're gonna take the action from that perspective. But yes, I am hiring ex-offenders. I'm saying it now. I'm gonna say a thing. I got a relationship. I have a strong relationship that's been built with the leadership. The leadership. When I say the leadership, I like to call them the old guard. The old heads of every street gang in the city, in the county. I have a relationship with Lee. I personally met with them, so they know I'm not afraid to talk to y'all. The power structure makes us scared to talk to y'all. Some of y'all are my cousin. Y'all somebody's uncle. Y'all somebody's father.
That's right.
Y'all somebody's brother.
That's right.
I'm not afraid to talk to y'all. I'm talking to y'all because y'all are part of the solution. You know,
absolutely.
So I'm talking to part of the solution. I'm going to have part of the solution on the team. So I have a strong relationship already with the leadership. 50 and over leadership, because I'm over 50. I have a relationship with already. You know what? They ready to help clean the community up. They tired of these shooters. They tired of all these shooters. Everybody is on board about making our community a safer place. Everybody's tired. All the brothers are tired of it. I'm going to lead the charge.
Now, in the minute we have left, how do you see that concealed carry law affecting the safety of the community? I mean, I just don't see how everybody carrying a gun is making everybody else safe. How will the sheriff's office deal with the fact that you have so many more people that are going to be carrying arms?
Let me address that real quick. Okay, concealed carry is law, Naima. We got to face the fact it's law. It's going to happen. Now, let's see how, you know. Now, on a street stop, a county officer stops Sylvester Baker, a citizen. When I get out of the car, officer, I have a concealed carry for me. You must make that known when they stop you. First, so that's going to be the law. If not, it's going to be told to those. You got to make that known. I have a concealed carry permit. I am carrying. It's either on me or whatever. Then that officer, you know what I mean? So everybody is going to have to make that announcement initially in the conversation. So, right. Now, what I think road rage is going to be a little shooting in the beginning. I don't think people are going to go crazy, but I think road rage is going to be some shootings in the beginning. Because people are already fighting like hell about you passing me up or butting me or cutting me off. I think it might be a little interaction there. You know what I mean? But everybody know you're responsible for your actions. You're going to jail. You know, so I hate to say about the person that got shot, killed, or wounded, but I think the only interaction we're going to see is going to be in road rage. you know.
Well, he doesn't have to work
on
that.
So railways might it might be a significant number of shootings as a result of road rage incidents. But every day out of the street, people are gonna like that element of surprise. Ain't nobody gonna be talking about our packing. They're gonna mess with me if you want to. And people are gonna know. See, one thing that they should have put it should have been a 40-hour class, because use of deadly force should have been touched, along with the consequences, the state statute, which people need to know, because you got a weak temperament. You don't really have a temperament that you really can handle insults and stuff like that. You fly out the hammer. You grab your gun real quick. That ain't about that. You know, somebody
right.
call you a bad man.
You reaching
in your side, or you reaching in your purse. No. If you got a weak temperament, you got a problem. You don't need to have a gun. You got to have a strong temperament.
Well,
you got to have a strong temperament to be carrying a gun. You slow to not slow to action, but you slow to anger. You know, you
right.
can get angry. Okay, I'm gonna pop you. I'm gonna cap you. You know. So no,
yeah.
but no.
Well,
I think
the consequences are going to have to be strong enough where people know that you could be put away for life for that. That moment that you chose to lose control of your temper, and so people have to choose to get that under control, or just choose
exactly.
not to be carrying a loaded weapon when you leave your house.
And what they're doing is in so many other states, Naima, that it's just that we're just not used to it here. You know, guys got permit carries for 20 states, 30 states. You'd be surprised. The men they got concealed carries. Especially the guys that travel, they could carry it in Indiana, right next door. You know, so
right.
it's just so many states got it, so we're a little afraid because there we go, resistant change and something new. We don't know about this. So
right.
as
we're already out of control with the crime.
Right,
so
but as a law enforcement professional, I see the problem being in road rage. I don't see everyday shootings like Wild Wild West. I see road rage is going to fly off the handle, and there's going to be a significant number of shootings as a result of road rages. But every day on the streets, I don't see any significant number of shootings coming about, you know. And it's here.
Well,
we got to deal with it.
Well,
here.
I think in those instances where there's the road rage killings or shootings or whatever, I think that's where perhaps the sheriff.
They
got to
come down on. Make an example out of them. Make
they
an example.
They come down on them hard.
Make an example out of them. I agree.
On that first few people that get out of control so that people know, look, you can lose your freedom forever for that one
we
time.
We about to make a, we make an example out of you, those citizens.
Control them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I
yeah.
certainly thank you for all that.
Oh,
you
I love our 2 hours. I think
today.
I got everything I could say. I can only say it's time for a new sheriff, Punch 95. It's
right.
about to happen.
Time
it's about to happen.
New. All right.
It's
so
about to happen.
Now, people who want to find out more about you, of course, your website is www.bakerforchange.com.
That's correct.
And is there a phone number they can reach you if they want
the,
to
the,
get involved and
number,
or find out more about your program that you plan to institute? What number
exactly.
can they reach?
Exactly. I'd rather have them call me at, I think it's 901, and I, you know what, I'm going to give this number because it's safer. It's 312-659-1418. 312-659-14. And for those in Chicago, our campaign office is located in the Auburn Gresham community at 7741 South Halsted. That's again 7741 South Halsted.
All right. Well, looking forward to Baker for Change. And a new
thank
sheriff
you,
in town.
Thank you for letting
thank
me
you
express
so
myself. Thank you. I love you, Naima.
Well, I love you, too. And, you know, we'll be talking soon. To
okay,
make sure
bye-bye.
We can educate and inform our public so they know what to do
okay.
on Election Day. All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. And thanks to all of you all who listen in and join in on The Female Solution. We appreciate all of your comments, and thank you for participating. And to my family listening around the world, I say thank you. Cheche, zanyaba, arigato gozaimasu, kamsahamnida, spasiba, danke, merci, gracias, shukran, medasi, eshe, ngibonga, tata, asante, toda. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Call in with your comments, 347-539-5639, and be a part of the solution.